This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back to Craig Ross, brought to you by, what were you saying again?
I'm brought to you by the zombie Mikhail Bakunin. I don't know what these guys are brought to you by, but, you know, I kind of like Wallace Beery bringing MGO Blog Roundtable, sponsored by, or, you know.
Yeah, I don't know where I got
to. Ale.
I don't know why I tabbed you as a Dos Equis guy. You do kind of fit that description. You know, the guy who does the Dos Equis commercials, he kind of reminds me of Craig.
I bowl overhand.
All right, let me tell you something about the sponsorship business model, because we get sponsored by, we have our own home loan company that sponsors us. But you know what else we do? We give our content out for free. So if Michigan State basketball wants to give out Michigan State basketball for free to everybody, I'm all for it. Sponsor everything. Go for it, dude. This is a great business model. I highly recommend it.
That's Seth Fisher. And, of course, Brian Cook, dying for your opinion on the Rocket Mortgage Spartans, brought to you by Dan Gilbert.
On our site, there are the MSU Spartans, brought to you by Homesure Lending. But
oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
This is something we do with, like, stadiums. Like, any stadium that's got a corporate sponsor, we just put one of our sponsors in there. So Ann Arbor Elder Law was the title sponsor of the Indiana Colts Stadium. So they're really doing pretty well.
How do you feel about being that association with MSU? I'm not sure Matt really approves.
Well, okay. Maybe they're the MSU Spartans presented by not Homesure Lending. I don't know. Got to get that brand out there, though, right?
You do. They play tonight, UCLA. We'll see if their run ends there. They had to go on a run just to get to the tournament. Let's see if they can continue it. Michigan, meanwhile, was the best team, all regular season, for the majority of the regular season, in the best league in the country. That was proven by the four teams, 2-1 seeds, 2-2 seeds. It's the first time in tournament history that you have one conference with four of the top eight seeds like that. So, the little slight concern that maybe the committee would downgrade Michigan a bit due to the loss of Isaiah Livers, but they did not, at least not off the one seed line. I'm curious, as we get into you guys and your commentary, what is your outlook for Michigan sans Isaiah Livers? Without Isaiah Livers around, how much does that impact your outlook for Michigan, Brian Cook?
Well, Ace has got some posts coming up on the site today about what Michigan can expect in his absence. And they actually held up pretty well offensively without Livers when he was off the floor, but they did take a big hit on defense. So, you know, they handle Maryland without Livers. Well, 15 minutes of Livers. And then they're playing Ohio State, who's a 2 seed in this tournament, and they lose by 1 because they get outshot by 23 points behind the 3-point line. And that felt like a pretty encouraging result, honestly, when all was said and done, because that is a recipe for a loss now. And maybe Michigan from January would be able to tank that and still win a game. Without Livers, not so much, but that's a very good team that was at the top end of this conference that Michigan played to a dead heat, despite a pretty big disadvantage in shooting. So feels pretty good. I feel like they should get out of the first weekend fairly easily. And then, if you look at these predictive metrics, like, everybody except Gonzaga, even as a 1 seed, isn't 50% to make the Final Four. So if they go out in the second weekend, they go out, it's going to be fine.
Seth?
Yeah, I mean, I've got them. They're going up. Their bracket is not too bad. You know, I guess from like a KenPom standpoint or like a seeding standpoint, they look, it's supposed to be bad. But, you know, Florida State is the same kind of Florida State, big bunch of tall people. Like, I think that they can get out of the first weekend. So then, like, who do you have after that, right? It's FSU. Alabama is, Alabama's an interesting team because, like, they do not take inefficient shots even when they get inefficient. Like, they are going to go to the rim or they're going to shoot threes. And if you got a rim blocker, they still go to the rim. So, you know, Chris Alt is a very is a very modern coach, right? He's using the same...
You mean Nate Oates?
Nate Oates. I said Chris Alt. Nate Oates. A very modern coach. So the number two seed, I think, they're very well coached, but they're kind of... beatable, I think that like if you they've gone up against some bigs in the SEC, and whenever there's a rim protector, they still go to the rim and they get rejected. So, you know, I think Hunter Dickinson could probably shut those guys down. UConn is a 7 seed, but I think they're kind of more of a 5 or a 4 seed. They could come through and scare you a little bit. So, and Texas is, you know, I think Texas has been overrated all year. So I kind of like their bracket. Like I think Michigan is not the killers, right? Like if with Isaiah, I would have probably had at least one of my brackets with Michigan going all the way, even though I always do not do that. I tell people never ever do that.
Well, you're a multiple bracket person, huh?
Well,
that's moral turpitude right there.
Yeah, you know, well, you got to play the game, right? Mm-mm.
Craig?
Yeah, for me, there's, in some context, there's no one that Michigan can't beat, in my opinion. I mean, and you saw that last year when they went to play Gonzaga with a team that probably isn't quite as good as this year's team. Now, maybe Gonzaga's not quite as good either, but they still had the core of the same teams, and Michigan just kicked them around on a neutral court. So I don't think that there's anybody that Michigan can't beat. The problem for me has been, and I mentioned this and I took heat for it, not from you guys, but from other people. I took heat for saying something was wrong in the Illinois game. It wasn't just that Illinois beat us badly. There was just something wrong with Michigan. And I went back and looked, and really, since I have a hunch Isaiah was hurt in that game.
He was.
Yeah. And because his game just suffered and it continued to suffer. And he just didn't score and didn't play well since the Illinois game. And I wonder if this is a team that really needs every single moving part. You know, they need a healthy Eli Brooks. They need a healthy Isaiah Livers to really be the team they were earlier in the year. I mean, this may be a team that has so much unique synergy that they're just not the same without it. I don't know. The question to me isn't so much who do they play or how do they match up with these guys. The question is, what is Michigan going forward at the tournament? Because I think when they're playing at their capacity, there's no one they can't beat. And as Brian, I think, pointed out, perhaps they lost by Ohio State by one in a game when they can't hit the ocean. I mean, Michigan came out, I think they were 5 for 18 in their first 18 threes, and Ohio State was 10 of 19 in their first in that same period. And yet it was ended up being a 1-point game. I just don't know. I just don't know what
we're hanging our hats on that 1-point game thing, but like Michigan, that was like the peak for Michigan in that game was being down by 1 point.
Yeah, that's
right. Like
fair.
They were gone and Franz had fouled out and then they came back with like some turnovers and stuff. So I think
those points also count. I mean, there was really only one instant in that game where you're like, okay, this wouldn't have happened in a normal game, and that's when Hunter Dickinson steals the ball and goes in for his Eurostep thing. So yeah, there's a bucket here and there, but the point is that Ohio State was playing very well. And Michigan just didn't shoot very well. So
yeah,
you know, you play that game over again, I expect Michigan would probably come out on top. So
for me,
other thing in that game, oh, go ahead, Sam.
You know, I think you point out Craig and he in talking to Isaiah about it, because I mentioned seeing him labor in that Illinois game. He said, you know what,
And it kind of slipped my mind. He said my dad brought that up too. And he said, I do think it was Illinois when it really started. And he wound up aggravating it more the more he played. But there's something to be said for having time to prepare for life without. I mean, they had to adjust to these new roles for Ohio State in, what, 8-12 hours? I know they did it in game against Maryland, but you're playing one of the top eight teams in the country in Ohio State, and you just found out that you're going to be doing it without your best shooter and team leader. And so I think it maybe took them some time to more aggressive Mike Smith, as it has to be a common thing every game. Same thing with Franz Wagner. What does that look like? Now you got a week to get used to that new skin. You got you're going to win this first game. In the second game, if it's LSU, I mean, man, it's going to be like a labor. LSU plays no defense. So I like the opportunity for the offense to really get on track here in the opening weekend is my point.
Yeah, and, you know, Craig's point about – oh, crap, I forgot.
It's easy to forget my points because they're so obscure generally.
Do you have to have every piece
right, yes,
for this team?
Michigan is a really balanced team. They don't have anybody out there who's a 10% usage guy, right? But they also don't have anyone out there except Hunter, and this is to a lesser extent as we get further into the season, who's really dominating usage. So usually, you know, if you have two guys who are 25-27% usage, the other guys don't really matter as much, and you can kind of change them out and it's fine. But Michigan doesn't have any spectators on this team, and that's one of the reasons that they've been so good. So the key going forward is, can Brandon Johns sort of continue that ability to post up against fours, maybe hit some threes, get a little bit more aggressive? Like his game against Ohio State, he had 21% usage, and I think that was extremely important for Michigan. I mean, he didn't hit a shot from the floor, but he got to the foul line a ton. He had three offensive rebounds, a couple of assists. Like, if Michigan can get that kind of level of production out of Brandon Johns, I think they can survive Livers' absence fairly well. But, you know, he's just been so inconsistent. I know Saadi just came on and was talking about how consistent he's been. That's not true.
Well, maybe he's been consistent in practice.
When he gets on the floor, there are games where you're like, damn, Brandon Johns. And then there's games where you're like, he's invisible. And Michigan probably can't survive an invisible Brandon Johns in the second round and going forward.
He also said he's in a good headspace, which is Saadi doing some coaching from the radio.
I mean, that's a really good point, Brian, because when you have Isaiah Livers, Brandon Johns can go in the game and just not make mistakes, right? He can play defense and just not make mistakes. But he can't do that now. He's got to be a plus guy. He can't just be a guy who's treading water for the team. And that's, we don't know if that can happen or not. You know, the incredible thing about the Ohio State game, and I mean, there were two incredible things about the Big Ten tournament. One was Mike Smith's line against Maryland. Nobody's ever seen anything like that. And I will bet a lot of money that line has never existed in the history of NCAA basketball. That is 15 or 18 points, 15 assists, no turnovers, 5 rebounds, a couple of steals. I'll bet that's never happened. I mean, I've never seen any game like that. I've been following basketball and basketball box scores since I was a little kid, which goes.
You mean never happened at Michigan, right? Is that what you
No, mean? Anywhere. I don't think that's ever happened anywhere. I watch, I mean, since I've.
You never seen an 18.15 assist game ever?
And no turnovers.
No turnovers.
And 5 rebounds. I'll bet it's never happened.
I have to check out the Westbrook stat line.
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe in the NBA, I don't know, but I don't think it's ever happened in the NCAA. And so that's one thing that was amazing about this. The other thing was the turnovers in the Ohio State game. Do you know how many times Michigan turned the ball over in that game?
How many?
Twice.
Good. Twice. And one was a terrible call on the baseline when
Galen Smith.
Yeah, just pushed him out of bounds and they
came. No. The Galen Smith was Maryland. That was Maryland.
Yeah. One was Brandon Johns took the ball, beat his guy to the baseline. The guy shoves him out of bounds and they call it and they give the ball. It was just an awful call by whoever that was, Courtney Green, I think. And then the other one was a I think, an illegal screen by Hunter. That's it. No ball mistakes in the entire game. I mean, it was really astounding, truly.
You said something, or maybe it was you, Brian. You said, you know, you just can't go in and not make mistakes. That was you, Craig. And mm-hmm. I think that there is a, you know, I think a sense of sort of valuing the presence on the court. I think for Brandon Johns, I mean, the, you know, some of the fouls that he would get, knowing that, you know, you got relief. You got Isaiah Livers that you're filling in for. It really doesn't matter. And not that Michigan is a team that fouls a lot anyway, but it doesn't matter if you come off the floor. Or Hunter Dickinson. We talked about it last week. You know, these fouls that he picks up on screens, not all of them are his fault. Some of them he put on the guards. But those cheap fouls, he has got to stay on the floor. And then, you know, Franz. You know, seems like there was some confusion about what his foul number, how many fouls he had at the end of the game. But the foul that he picked up to foul out, it's like, oh, man, that's just not a foul that you can. So a sense for these guys now in the absence of Isaiah Livers, your presence is so much more valuable. You just don't have that kind of leeway anymore to come off the floor, whether it's for you aren't doing anything or fouls or for whatever reason. Franz and Hunter especially, they've got to be on the floor more here in the tournament.
Yeah, and the thing that's really kind of cropped up with Hunter in terms of foul trouble is like drop coverage. He switches on a guard. The guard pulls up from 15 to 18 feet, and he's closing out on them and landing on them.
Yeah,
and like just don't. the reduction in the ability of whoever that is to hit that shot is not worth the potential that you're going to get a foul. Mm-hmm. So if Hunter Dickinson has forced a guy into a pull-up jumper, his job is done. And he doesn't need to contest that.
Yeah, I agree. And guard, let the man set the screen.
sometimes these like moving screen calls on Hunter Dickinson are absolutely trash calls. Yeah. Like there was, I don't remember exactly Illinois which game one. It was. No, I was thinking of, like the Michigan State game where he's completely standstill and they give him his second foul and you're just like, that's complete trash.
That was the one where he got clobbered in the chest by the defender. He's standing completely, you know.
Yeah, he's awesome. Standing stock still and he gets, and it's just like, all right, I guess Breslin still applies even when the people aren't here. Waffle guy still using his mind powers from home. But in any case, so, you know, Craig was talking about the draw a little bit, and this kind of reminds me of the draw in 2014 where everybody is like, oh, this region is loaded because Wichita State grabbed Kentucky as an 8 seed. And then, of course, we get Kentucky in the Elite Eight. I feel a similar situation because, like, okay, which half of the bracket here is loaded? And it's the one that has the 2 seed on it because they drew Connecticut, and everybody was like, don't put them on the 8-9 line, and they didn't. And so there's a strong possibility that Michigan is actually facing a 7 seed. Now, a 7 seed that's extremely highly rated in KenPom, actually higher than, I believe, Florida State, the 4. Yeah. But
as one of the best players in the tournament, too.
Right, yeah. And they also missed book night for 8 games of their 22. So it's kind of a...
And that was four like, they might seven even losses.
Be, they might even be underrated there. So, but I'd rather face UConn than Alabama, and I think there's a shot that we're going to see that happen. Now, Florida State could be a problem because they have Scotty Barnes, who is a 6'9 point guard-ish, can legitimately guard 1-4, probably 1-5 against a lot of college teams. They're the number one team in effective height on KenPom. They're the tallest team in the country. Now, one good thing is that their main center, I'm not going to get this pronunciation right, Basil Kopakova, is the worst post-up player I've seen this year. He's 5th percentile, and he does not put pressure on Dickinson in that way. So I think there's a strong chance that he'll be able to stay on the floor for most of that game. And also, like when Austin Davis gets some minutes, he's not a guy who's going to punish that. So the problem there is like, okay, are those big guards, those 6'6" guys who actually have NBA-style athleticism, are they going to be able to just overwhelm Michigan's backcourt? I don't know.
I don't think so. They're not. I mean, Florida State and Connecticut on KenPom are rated almost identically. And one's 15, one's 16, I think. But Florida State is not really a great defensive team. You know, they're okay. They're sort of vaguely okay, but they're not really a great.
They don't rebound team. For all that height out there. They're a terrible defensive rebounding team.
Well, they try to block literally everything, right? Yeah. We remember this from the game a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
They put 7-footers out there, and their whole thing is they jump at every shot. So you get a lot of Kobe assist type things. And Mike Smith, one of his best plays might be just drawing some help and putting it high enough off the backboard so that Hunter Dickinson can get the rebound and put it back.
Or Johns.
The thing that jumps out to me about that Florida State team, I said this to the guys the other, because Seth Davis, like, I got Florida State taking out Michigan in the Sweet 16. And I'm like, look, man, I watched this Florida State team the last couple of weeks of the season have two opportunities to lock up a down ACC. They could have won the regular season crowns on the line against Notre Dame. Do you guys look? I'm looking for Notre Dame in this tournament field somewhere.
Notre Dame is the softest team in the country.
Notre Dame stinks. So
they lost that game. Then you have an opportunity. I mean, I'm not sold on Georgia Tech either, and less so now that they're going to be playing the first couple of games potentially without Wright. But they go out and they can win the ACC tournament, a down ACC, and they get beat by Georgia Tech too. I'm just not. And they had 25 turnovers in that game. You know, a very, very sloppy outcome or a sloppy performance for them. I'm just not sold on that team being disciplined enough, being mentally tough enough to beat a Michigan squad. A lot of talent, but this strikes me as your typical Leonard Hamilton team. Has a lot of talent, but, you know, their ceiling comes when they get in the postseason and they face better prepared teams, in my opinion.
Go ahead, sorry.
So they have one win over a top 25 KenPom team. That is a 21-point hand blasting of Virginia. So there's that. But also, they went to overtime with Indiana. Indiana shot 27% from three, and they went to overtime with Florida State. That doesn't really scream dangerous to me.
And that was at Florida State, and that was a home game. And so, yeah, I'm not sold on Florida State either. I mean, as Seth points out, they're a terrible defensive rebounding team. They foul a ton. Their opponents get to the line a whole lot.
And they give up a lot of three pointers too. They're not always great looks because they got those 6'6", 6'5" guards out there. But I mean, you give up threes, they're going to go in. And I think that's because they got so many guys who are paint-bound. They play like three bigs a lot of times.
Yeah. So I think a useful comparison from that Indiana game is Trace Jackson Davis, who put up 25 points on 21 shooting possessions with 7 offensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. So that's something we could definitely see from Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah, we got to get that far first. I mean, it isn't clear to me that LSU beats Providence, by the way, or not Providence, St. Bonaventure. Yeah, I mean, that game is a pick'em to me. That's a complete toss-up.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I don't know who's going to be able to win the tempo matchup there. Is LSU going to be able to speed up St. Bonnie's, or is St. Bonnie's going to be able to grind things to a frustrating halt for a very talented LSU team with 3 players in their contract year? You know, they're going to be ready to go. You know, they're going to be ready to, you know, put it all on the line and try to extend this thing a little more. I just, that's another team, though, for all the talent that they have. I think they're horribly prepared. They're just hired guns. They're high salary guys that are just there for the salary, and then they're out. They don't practice defense. They're like the Big 12. They're worse than Iowa. As far as we talk about how bad Iowa is defensively, go check LSU's defensive rankings. They don't pay attention on that end of the floor.
They are 75 slots worse than Iowa now.
And it doesn't matter against a lot of them because they are very, very talented. But a team like that just doesn't scare me. If you're a one-dimensional team like that, doesn't scare me. And I think Michigan, against either team, Michigan has shown the ability to get up and down, or if you want to get into a half-court game, they can play that way too. So I think Michigan beats either team. I just don't know which one of those teams is going to win the tempo battle. I'm leaning LSU because they have more talent, but I would not be surprised, to your point, Craig, if St. Bonaventure can just frustrate the hell out of them by slowing the damn thing down.
Well, Well, this is going to be a miss or make shots game, right? Because LSU has these three guys, Thomas, Watford, and Smart, and they never come off the court. They don't play any defense, and they and about 20% of their makes inside the rim are assisted. This is just ISO ball. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see Thomas take a bunch of mid-range twos. He hits at a 40% clip. Smart's at the same rate. Watford's at the same rate. They can get to the rim sometimes, but if they don't get to the rim, the ball's just going up. It's going to look like Josh Christopher in a high school game. and the issue is that they're extremely good at that kind of stuff. They have a lot of talent. Smart in particular is shooting 42% from two, and under half of his threes are assisted. So that is an opponent invariant chucker who's 6'4". Meaningful contests from Michigan's backcourt are going to be tough to come by. The average shot quality they're going to get is going to be garbage, but they're basically a team of Dwayne Washington's where they can put down bad shots on a regular basis. But the problem is, I mean, Trenton Watford is 6'9". He's 240. He's really more of a four than a center, and he's literally their only post player. So he can't play defense against Hunter Dickinson, because if he does, he's going to have to go out, and then they're going to be playing a 6'7" guy because Sharif O'Neal went out for the season. So they just don't have a backup five. They don't really have a starting five. They have, you know, he's got a little bit of stretch, which is a little bit worrying, but he's a guy who, like, you look at that top three, and they're averaging, like, two fouls a game. And I don't know what the right number is, but 1.6 fouls a game is not the right number, right? You got to be a little bit more aggressive than that. But, yeah, they don't I feel like we talk about Juwan Howard's playbook, the kind of things that he's able to do, the kind of things that he's brought from the NBA. And, you know, I think this is going to be a layup line if Michigan does get LSU.
Yeah, I mean, again, it comes to me, it just comes back to how does Michigan play? It isn't, you know, my original thinking when I looked at the bracket, who in there can't they beat? And the answer is really none of them, and that includes Gonzaga. And so it's just a question of how does Michigan play, and particularly how do they play without Isaiah Livers? I mean, does Brandon Johns step up? Can Shondi Brown play a little more consistent?
And so we were at the very end of the last segment, guys, talking about the East and who can't Michigan beat. We certainly think they have it in them. You know, they have enough on this roster to beat anyone in this bracket. I was looking at the draw. I was like, man, if I'm Illinois, I'm like, what the heck? We should be flipped with Michigan. You know, I'm surprised they aren't crying foul over that. Because I think they have a hell of a – I think their road is way tougher than Michigan's when you consider they might have to see Oklahoma State in the Sweet 16.
Well, Houston's over there, yeah.
I mean, Oklahoma State is a team that, you know, they have Cade Cunningham, and that's always a factor. But, like, if you look at their overall season performance, it hasn't been that great. So maybe they're coming on late, and that with when you have a guy like Cunningham, you can expect him to improve more quickly than, you know, seniors and juniors. But, you know, for Illinois, like getting Tennessee or Oklahoma State in that second round, I mean, in the Sweet 16, doesn't look too bad to me, especially Tennessee, because Tennessee, you know what they did to us with Kofi Coburn doing drop coverage. Tennessee takes way too many mid-range jumpers, and they're not good at them, and Illinois can force them. So if Tennessee's able to come through there, that's just going to be a demolition. And, maybe Cade Cunningham can completely destroy what Illinois wants to do defensively, but I don't know.
I think Tennessee's out their center as well. So if you're going against Kofi and you don't even have your guy there, like
they have a couple of guys, but yeah, they're going to be missing one of their. He's their Mark Denal type center, so I don't know if that's the worst loss for them.
At Oklahoma State in the last month, so from February 13th to March 13th, they're 8-2 in that span, and the two losses were at Baylor. And then they obviously lost their Texas, right? But the games they won, guys, they also beat Baylor in that run in order to play Texas. But they beat West Virginia twice in the span of 5 days. They beat Oklahoma twice in the span of a few days. They beat Texas Tech in there as well. I mean, they are trending up at the right time. Let's just put it that way.
That's true. I mean, you look at them statistically, and you're kind of like, I'm not that impressed. But you do have a guy who can take over a game.
Yeah, so I wonder how they would choose to defend Cade Cunningham. You know, do you put Ayu Dosunmu on him, or do you like, nah, I'm gonna I don't want to tax IO that way and only put him on Cade Cunningham and like a crunch time situation type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, guy's 6'8", right? So this is a rare situation where IO would not have a height advantage. And Illinois does have an issue is that they don't really have a four, right? They play with, you know, they tried playing Bishanishvili next to Coburn last year, and that didn't work, so they went away from that. And everybody else on their team like tops out at, you know, 6'5", 6'6". So finding a guy at Check Cunningham could be an issue.
I mean, Oklahoma State is going to have a hard time with Kofi Coburn. I mean, because they really have nobody who even comes close. You know, I still think you need to, as soon as he starts making any move at all, you got to double him because that dude cannot pass at all. He's dreadful as a passer, and I don't get why teams aren't doing that. But
I mean, they do it. The issue is that when Kofi Coburn catches the ball, most of the time, he doesn't even need to dribble, right? Or he has one power dribble.
So he's so deep. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a great point. I thought about that too. And to me, I think why Michigan State was able to do it because they could waste fouls fighting for position.
Right.
Fouls. Yeah. They had fouls to spare. So fight him like hell. If he gets position deep, foul like hell.
Yeah. Because he can't shoot free throws either. Yeah,
don't let him get shots up. So, you know, you either have someone really strong enough to man, you know, to keep him out of from establishing deep position, which few teams do, or you have enough bodies, enough fouls to spare to fight him for a position or to foul the crap out of him. If he does establish position, Michigan State is one of the few teams that does that. So that's the only thing that I can really come up with as to why we don't see it more, because I'm with you, Craig. I mean, it just seems like a no brainer. If you're going to slow them down, he's the hole in the middle. He's the event horizon. He's the guy you throw it in there and it ain't coming out. So, right.
Well, their starting center, Oklahoma State, is 210 pounds.
That's what I mean. I don't see him. I just don't see him checking Coburn at all. He's just going to get shoved into the stands.
Coburn is going to pick him up and throw him into the basket stanchion.
He's got a brother on the team too, who's even smaller than he is. Who's their other big? So, I mean, they can throw some bodies out there, but I don't know if those bodies are gonna do much. The interesting thing about Oklahoma State, I think their only two losses that were inexplicable were both to TCU, and TCU just put them on the foul line a bunch because they're not a great free throw shooting team. Cunningham you can't foul, but like, you know, their center and their other
wing. TCU is basically Northwestern or worse.
Yeah,
I mean they're terrible.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's hard to understand how you could lose twice to such a miserable team. You know, I don't know. I didn't see those games, so I'm not sure.
I just looked at the KenPom pages, and it looked like they put them on the line, and that was just doubled up Cunningham and tried to survive with the rest by hacking.
Yeah. So some of the injury affected matchups. I wonder if those injuries swayed you guys definitively in another direction. Villanova, Winthrop. It certainly affected me. I went with Winthrop in that game. Oklahoma, Missouri, definitely. I was on the fence on that. When Devyar Harmon went out, or it was announced that he's going to be out for the opening weekend, definitely flipped me towards Missouri in that matchup. And then Moses Wright out for Georgia Tech. I was on the fence with them against Loyola Chicago. And when Charles Barkley can call out a player, he called out Cam Crutwig. It's like, like, okay, Cam Crutwig, his reputation precedes him, and he won't have Moses Wright to contend with in that contest. Has me leaning Loyola in that matchup. I'm curious if you guys were affected by the injuries as much as I was.
Well, I mean, Loyola is a top 10 team in KenPom, and I don't know how much credence to give that, right? Because they played one power conference team this year, and that was Wisconsin, and Wisconsin beat them by 14. And, you know, Wisconsin has big, shiny KenPom numbers, but I think it's in part because of this game. And, you know, they struggled in the Big Ten. So Crutwig, I mean, he's a slightly slimmed down version of what he was before, but still, you know, pretty much what Austin Davis would be in the MVC, I think. And I think that he will have a pretty good shot at, you know, going up against Georgia Tech because, you know, they're going to be playing their backup five. I mean, they have a freshman guy who's 7-1, but he's barely played. Like, I think he can go to work against those guys, but then Kofi Coburn is just going to eat him alive.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, Sam, I heard you say you thought Winthrop would beat Villanova.
I do.
So you're picking number 92 in KenPom over number 12.
I think Colin Gillespie's absence is that significant. Yeah.
I'm not sure I disagree with that. I think Winthrop is at least a live dog in this one, even partly because Nova isn't the sort of team that's going to, I mean, Winthrop's played no one. Let's start there. They've only lost one game, but they've played the worst. I mean, they've played nobody. And, you know, unless USC Upstate is good this year. And but the problem that Nova has is they really don't block any shots at all. I think they're last in the country in shot blocks, and they don't steal the ball at all. So they're not the kind of team that's going to intimidate, you know, physically, Winthrop, who, you know, a team is 23-1, even if they're playing, you know, a weak schedule, you've got to sort of, you know, pay attention. So you could be right. It doesn't make any sense, really, that a team that is feasted on USC Upstate and Radford and whoever else they play, you know, could beat Villanova. But I don't think that's quite so crazy, especially with the injury.
Winthrop is, you know, their one loss is a 2-point loss because the threes weren't falling. But that's what Winthrop is. They're a high tempo team that goes down and shoots. Mm-hmm. Like, they're, you know, you remember Toledo earlier this year. They're, you know, a version of that. Now, they haven't lost it all this year because, like you said, they haven't played anybody in the KenPom, I think, top 50 or top 100. But yeah, they're a team that, you know, they win the boards, but they win the boards in a, you know, a bad conference, and they have a 6'9 guy. DJ Burns, 6'9, 275. So that dude's an offensive tackle. And, you know, that's a lot of fun when you're playing the kind of teams that they're playing, but, you know, you get up against tournament teams. I don't see Winthrop even beating Villanova without killing Colin Gillespie. I have Villanova winning that one.
So Villanova's two games without Gillespie are a 2-point loss at Providence and a 1-point loss against Georgetown, and Georgetown's a 12. Right? So, like, this is a situation where it really does look like Colin Gillespie was the straw that stirred a lot of that drink, especially because this is a version of Villanova that doesn't have the shooting that previous Villanova teams do. Like, Robinson Earl is not really a shooter. Mm-hmm. They have another starter who's out there a lot, who's like a 31% guy. Like, the ability for them to toss the ball around the perimeter and literally anybody who touches the ball is a 40% three-point shooter is not the case for them this year. So, you know, they're going to be vulnerable to one of those games where they just don't have the ability to hit from behind the arc. And that could take them out of it. Now, I don't necessarily think Winthrop is going to be the team to do it, but
that's what I think, Brian. I mean, I don't think, to be honest, push comes to shove, I don't think there's a chance in hell that Winthrop beats Villanova. Okay. And so I disagree with Sam on this one. But I mean, I can sort of see the reasoning there because I don't think they'll be intimidated, but Winthrop has, I mean, that schedule, I mean, how can you know anything about Winthrop when you play Radford, you know, every other night? And so I don't see that.
Here's what we need to know about that. Villanova and Winthrop, neither one of those teams are going to beat Purdue. So whichever one gets out of there is just going to lose in the next round.
I agree with that.
They're going to get blasted by Purdue. Wins.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens when Purdue faces Baylor. That's the one that I was really like.
I'm not. Like, it's just not. I mean, Baylor is athletic enough to put the Purdue centers away from the basket, and they're just not going to be able to keep up with Baylor's shooting because Baylor has 3-point shooters who come from everywhere, and Purdue has like two guys who can shoot.
Yeah, and who are the two?
Stefanovic and sometimes. Brandon Newman.
Yeah, and Ivy sometimes. He got really hot in the Big Ten tournament.
No. Do you remember him against Michigan?
Oh yeah, of course. And he's a 25% shooter on the year. I just, against Ohio State, all of a sudden, he was taking heat checks and making them, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, so they got two guys who can really shoot, and that's, you know, not enough when your posts are just incredibly paint bound. So Yeah, I feel like Purdue is a great matchup for Baylor. Baylor will be like, yes, please give me that.
Yeah, my question about Baylor, shooting's going to be there. They are not the same defensive team that they were. And it actually started a little bit before the pause, but certainly after the pause. And you know, how affected were they by their COVID issue? I mean, it's different from Michigan in that Michigan's shutdown, their pause was not due to anything with the team itself. Whereas Baylor, they had COVID go through their team. And so, the further removed from that they are, do they start to look more like themselves defensively is a big question. If they do, then they're in the Final Four. If they don't, if it gets into a shootout with Ohio State, for instance, then Ohio State will have a chance in that game. Ohio State doesn't guard either. So the question will be, like I said, does Baylor get back to playing the Baylor defense that we'd seen them play for the majority of the season?
In my mind, Baylor is the most likely team to win the NCAAs. Really? Yeah, I like them better than Gonzaga. And I think they are the most likely winner of this tournament. They're a really good offensive team. They can shoot the ball. Defensively, you're right. They've sort of tanked out, but I don't think they're that bad a defensive team. I mean, I think they're average plus, maybe. But, I like them better than anyone in this tournament.
I'm surprised you guys haven't watched a bunch of Baylor because their games keep on appearing like right before Michigan games. So I like keep on tuning into them on like CBS, like, you know, an hour before a Michigan game year. And they are a different team after their COVID break, especially their center, Flo Thamba. Which I love that name.
Flo Thamba.
Yeah, he has just been kind of off. He's just been slow to react. He was always kind of a paint pound guy to begin with, but they've been having a hard time getting out on threes afterwards, even though they have two really good guards, and he's not been scoring at all. So on Torvik, I split them down for the last month since they're 5-2. They're only 38th in the country in the last month. So they're definitely, I mean, those numbers can move around a lot, but they are definitely beatable now where I don't think that they were earlier in the season. Kind of like Michigan, where, like, you know, they're still a good team. I would still take them pretty far, but I would not automatically slot them into the Final Four or put them into the championship game. I think they're going to have I have them going out to Illinois in the Final Four, I think.
Yes, I think they're statistically, they're the best shooting team in the country. They certainly shoot it better from three than anybody else in the country. And I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I mean, this tournament is such that we've got, what's the right word? It's such a parochial tournament, or the season has been such a parochial one, in that everybody's sort of played in their own little cloister and there hasn't been a lot of anything else. But still, shooting is shooting, and I think this is the team that's most likely to win. And if I have to pick someone, I pick Baylor.
The thing I keep on reminding myself is there are no perfect basketball teams, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's got flaws. Even Gonzaga has flaws, even though they don't play anybody this year. That, you know, I don't know if we're moving over to their bracket, but in the West, with everybody has COVID, like I think Gonzaga has a pretty easy path. But like, they're still, they've not played a good defense all year. They played Iowa in their in the non-conference. And that was before Iowa was even half trying on defense.
Well, Gonzaga is in a unique spot. Well, first of all, there was one perfect basketball team, the 2003-2004 Detroit Pistons.
Sheed. I did, by the way, notice that you're wearing your D Mercy shirt today.
Here we go. The Gonzaga has an interesting situation where they've actually already played the 2, 3, and 4 in their region, and they've beaten all of them pretty handily. So that it seems inexplicable to me that you would do that when you could just flip Purdue from the 4 and not have that rematch looming. But they only really do that for the first weekend. But I do think that Virginia is a scary matchup from an underdog perspective, just because that is going to be a game that doesn't have a lot of possessions in it. And whenever there's a relatively low number of possessions, there's always a greater chance for an upset.
How prepared will they be though?
How rough I don't know. Maybe. I mean, so we're talking about like the second weekend, right? And I think that their positive test was not like a player who actually plays.
Okay.
So I think that whatever, like if they get through to the Sweet 16, I think they'll probably be at more or less full strength.
What do you guys think of the sixth seed? And the only reason they got mine is because Evan Mobley has had a terrific year. I don't know how much stock you put in Pac-12 basketball, though. But Evan Mobley has been a beast this year.
No, I'm actually picking USC to go fairly deep in this tournament.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you just have an overwhelming physical talent in Mobley. They kind of skidded down the stretch, I guess. So, like, the problem is, like, okay, they had an 18-point loss to Colorado at Colorado, right? And I'm not picking Colorado to do much of anything because they are a totally different team at home versus away. And that's because they play at altitude. And you always have to think about that, especially when you're playing in Indianapolis, which is not noted for its many mountains. So, you know, I feel like USC is a team that, you know, they're a little bit sketchy, especially when it comes to shooting. They're one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the country. So there's always some questions there. But their two-point defense is Michigan-level two-point defense, and I think that's going to be really helpful for them.
So go ahead, Seth.
Oh yeah, I mean they're a little bit like Illinois, where they are, you know, they're a center and a guard. Their guard is Taj Eddie, and he's a point guard. But like the teams that have been able to beat them, they lost to Arizona earlier in the season, and that was because Arizona was able to just, you know, man up on Mobley, and nobody else in the Pac-12 can do that. And I think like if they run into a team that has a 7-1 center, say Michigan, but you know, they're not.
But Hunter would love to see that.
I think Hunter Dickinson against Evan Mobley would be really interesting to see. Gonzaga is one of those teams that's got a good center too. So I kind of have them going like Brian. I kind of have them going pretty far until they run to somebody who can stop them. But if you can't stop them, you double them up, and then they can.
You know, part of that is they're going to be going up against Kansas probably in the second round, and I am not a Kansas person this year. Like they spend so much usage on David McCormack, their center, who's terrible. It's just, I mean, and you got
Mobley.
And they
got COVID, by the way. So Jalen Wilson's out of that team as well.
Yeah. So you have no Jalen Wilson. You have a team that's really dependent on a fairly inefficient center going up against Mobley. Like that seems like a pretty great second round matchup for a six seed.
I like
that. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. What do you got? What do you guys think of Michigan State UCLA tonight? Two teams that shouldn't be in the tournament at all. I mean, Michigan State.
Technically, they're not. You have to if you're playing in a play-in game, you're not in. If you have to play in, you are not in.
I mean, Michigan State beats 6 meatballs and then goes 9-12, and they're in the tournament. UCLA, you know, is an awful team. They're 5-7 in their last 12, and that's with a close win. At home against Washington, who is even worse than TCU, probably the worst team I've seen this year, and of a major college team. And so both these teams look bad to me, but I like Michigan State quite easily, actually, because I think UCLA is probably off. You have any instinct on this one?
Not really.
I won't shortchange what they did at the end of the season. I mean, they beat Illinois. They beat
Michigan.
The best conference in the country. You run up what they did at the end of the year. That gets you in. All right, gets you in the play-in game to Seth.
Yeah.
I think they win tonight.
I have UCLA winning just because it'd be funny.
If they get an okay whistle, I mean, it's always a toss-up. It's always a toss-up if they're going to get as favorable a whistle when they step out of conference play as they get in conference play. If they get a favorable whistle, I think they'll win tonight.
Michigan State has been a much better team ever since Foster Lawyer got injured, forcing Tom Izzo to play his best lineups.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that. And personally, I think they have a reasonable shot to make the round of 16.
Great. He's got to be able to score to basketball. He cannot score consistently anyway.
Yeah, they totally depend on hitting mid-range shots. And so those are kind of, you hit them because they give them to you, or you don't hit them because they're not great shots. I mean, the thing about UCLA is that they're ending the season. Yeah, they're on a 4-game losing streak. One of those losses at Colorado again. One of them is at Oregon. They have a 1-point loss to USC. The Oregon State loss is pretty inexplicable in the tournament, but I don't think it's quite as bad as it looks right now from their perspective. So
you're also leaving out the winner of that team. The winner of that game gets to play BYU, which has Matt Harms for some reason.
Yeah, Matt Harms made he's Dutch. How's he gonna go to BYU? That's culture shock right there, man. Like, he asks for a beer and he gets a Bud Light that's watered down. Come on, man.
Well, they needed a windmill, and so that's the deal. You know, I don't think Michigan State wins that game. I think they beat BYU, and I think they're going to wander into the round of 16. So we'll see.
BYU is a better team than you give them credit for. They've been on a run lately too. Like they kind of come together with Alex Barcelo. Just kind of took off in the second half of the season.
You stop Aaron Henry, you stop that team on the offensive end of the floor. In my opinion. No one else gives them consistent offense. No one. So you get in the tournament, and you only have one guy that can get it done consistently. You're gonna get tripped up.
Maybe Rocket Watts will go 7 of 11 on 18 footers.
Well, every 15 games.
I'm slightly bitter about that. Hey, so you know, I was looking around at you know, seeing if I was paying attention this year to where some of the guys Michigan didn't get and how they fared, and wondered if they regret it. Like, I wondered if Namari Burnett, did you regret what you did? Josh Christopher, did you regret what you did? Walker Kessler, he came on late. They made the tournament. Did you regret what you did? Moses Moody. Didn't regret it. Moses Moody had himself a hell of a year.
Yeah, he's ticketed for the lottery now.
Yeah, I mean, just big time ball player. I wonder what you guys think of Arkansas.
It's tough to tell with them because they've been in the SEC, which is kind of like, you know, yeah, Florida did okay in the SEC, and we've seen Florida and their level of coaching. It's just, you have LSU making the tournament from this league, and we know about their level of coaching. So it's kind of difficult to tell exactly what their level is, especially because they played nobody in the non-conference schedule.
Yeah, their big win is Alabama because they have a 7-3 center, and Alabama kept on trying to take shots at the rim anyway because Alabama will not take a long two no matter what, even if like that's the only thing they're giving you. But Arkansas is just a weird team. They got a 6'6 Jalen Tate at their point guard. Like they are just... They're a weird team. They're hard to make anything out of. But
that 7-3 guy only played 10 minutes in that game, Seth.
Who is the other center they have? Jalen Williams. Like, I think they have a COVID issue too, don't they? Or is that are they kind of?
I don't think Arkansas does, but so Arkansas plays super fast and they're super fast defensively, which is usually not good because teams that give up a lot of early shots usually have been either crashing the boards, giving up a lot of transition, or just they have breakdowns that give people buckets early in the shot clock. So they're kind of a pressure defense that they're top 100 in turnover rate. They're on a bit of a run towards the end of the season, but you know, it's a situation where I don't know what to make of this team.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you on this one, partly because their non-conference schedule, I'll read it off for you, is Mississippi Valley State, North Texas, UT Arlington, Big Daddy Lipscomb, Southern, Central Arkansas, Oral Roberts, Abilene Christian. That's who they played in the non-conference, and you learn nothing from that
schedule. They did lose to Oklahoma State by four. Later in the SEC, Big 12 Challenge.
Yeah, and that was on the road. And so that's maybe their most impressive game of the year is a 4-point loss. So I just don't know. They got killed by Alabama, you know. So I've known it's just hard to know. It, like I say, it's so parochial that you don't have any real interconference play this year between significant teams. So hard to project.
So let's talk. Let's get you guys down, your final four. So let's start with each. Who did you have as your final four?
I got Zaga. I got UConn coming out of our, because I never take Michigan. That's just my rule. Baylor and Illinois, and then I have Gonzaga losing to Illinois in the championship.
Brian?
I got all Chuck. 4-1 seeds.
Craig?
Well, I like Baylor and Gonzaga. I like Baylor to win the tournament. The other two brackets, I just don't know. I guess I'm going to go with Texas and Illinois, but I have no real instinct for this tournament.
Is they going deep?
No, they're around 16.
Okay.
No, I'm losing there. But I don't know. I could ask me in 2 minutes, and I'll say that I got, you know, somebody else. Houston.
How far do you have Michigan going?
I have no instinct about Michigan at all, really. I think they'll win their first two games, and after that, ask me then. What do they look like in those first two games? But right now, I don't know.
Here's the thing: if you're in a big bracket, then you're in a big bracket with a lot of other Michigan fans. People are going to create a bracket just to have a Michigan wins bracket, and then they have their real bracket. Like, there's going to be a lot of brackets in there that you're going up against the numbers if you're taking the home team. If you're in a bracket in Detroit, don't take Michigan State either. Like, that's just a rule.
What about you?
So I went chalk too. I think Michigan is actually gonna get to the Final Four. I was a little reluctant with Baylor. You know, Baylor is the one that scares me. I think Illinois is going to get there. They're playing really well. Oklahoma State will be their toughest challenge, in my opinion, en route to the Final Four. But I think they'll get past it because I don't think they'll be able to contend with Kofi. But Baylor will be interesting. Like I said, can they find it defensively? Because I think Ohio State could clip them. I think Dwayne Washington has emerged, and he'll be one of the favorites, in my opinion. He'll be all Big Ten first team, one of the favorites for Big Ten Player of the Year next year. I think he's on that track now. I think it's going to be a titanic backfield battle with him and Butler. But if Baylor plays the kind of defense that they were playing earlier in the season, they'll beat Ohio State because Ohio State can't get stops in crunch time.
Wait a minute. Kofi Coburn's going to be back next year, right?
I don't know.
No one in the NBA is taking the dude. He's going to be back at Illinois next year, and you got Dwayne Washington winning Player of the Year already.
I said he will be one of the favorites.
Oh, okay.
One of the favorites. But would I take Dwayne Washington over Kofi Coburn as a Player of the Year next year? Yes, I would.
Okay.
Yes, I would.
Is Illinois going to return anybody else though? Like, is it going to be Curbelo's team after? Like, because
I think returning Curbelo in a sophomore year is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he'll be pretty good. But like I said, Ohio State Baylor is really intriguing. Mm-hmm. Will it be Baylor of old or will it be a shootout? I still will lean Baylor in that equation. I think they'll be able to get more stops than Ohio State. Look at Ohio State these last couple of games. Couldn't hold on. Could barely hold on against Purdue. Could barely hold on against Michigan. And then, of course, you saw Illinois close them out. They cannot get stops in crunch time.
Baylor has taller guards than Michigan has. Like, Dwayne Washington, our problems with him were because, you know, Eli Brooks is a try-hard defender, but he's only 6 feet. And Mike Smith's even shorter. And, like, he's a guy who can rise up and shoot. Eli Brooks
is 6 feet?
How tall is Eli?
I thought he was 6'3".
No, Eli's about 6'1", I think.
Eli's about a little 6'1", bit taller than me.
And Mike Smith is probably 5'11". That would be my guess. 5'10", 5'11". But I'm guessing Eli's 6'1". But,
yeah. We might be fudging that one on the roster a bit.
I went chalk.
Yeah.
We shall see how it all breaks down. But, fellas, it has been another spirited discussion. I will close by asking very briefly, hockey outlook. I mean, they dominated the Big Ten tournament for 5 periods, but that pesky sixth and then overtime period is what did them in, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, that game against Minnesota wasn't as lopsided as a 2-0 score indicated. It sucks to lose it there, but they're in. There's no question that the Big Ten's going to get 3 teams and they're third in the pecking order. So just try not to have a 2-0 lead in the third period of a tournament game. No, it doesn't sound right. Like they'll
Boy, that's
they'll
never happened in. To Michigan hockey in ever.
I mean, they'll be in with a shot. Like, they're in the tournament. Anybody who's in the tournament is viable for the championship, except maybe the Atlantic Hockey representative. And they have played well enough in spurts this year to believe that they can do it. Now, they've also been snake bit pretty much the whole year, but I feel like they've got a shot.
I'm sorry for not paying attention to any of these questions in the chat. I had the screen next to my. Someone asked me real quick, is there a guess Colgate as an upset possibility? No, Colgate is not an upset possibility. By the way, no, Colgate will not beat Arkansas. Back to Michigan hockey.
Colgate has cavities on defense. But start there. They're not winning. Where were we on hockey? Yeah.
They lost Beecher for the season, and that hurts. But like Bortolo, Brisson, Owen Power, you can see each of these guys kind of coming into their own and being every game that increment better, improving rapidly. You know, I think that they've dominated most teams that aren't Minnesota in terms of zone time, shots, that kind of thing. So I think Minnesota is probably the best team in the country. Maybe Wisconsin is up there too, because Caulfield is electric. But if Michigan isn't playing either of those two teams, I think that they will have an advantage in terms of skill, an advantage in terms of shots, an advantage in terms of how they play.
Michigan has beaten Wisconsin 3 or 4 times. They played them. And on the first two Minnesota games, they lost both of those, yes, and Minnesota was much better. But Michigan was also missing their top 5 scorers. And missing your top 5 scorers is salient. And when Michigan had their team and Minnesota had their team, it was, 2-1 Minnesota, with Minnesota winning in overtime after being down 2-0. So I think Michigan can beat anybody, basically.
Wisconsin and this was a missing team Caulfield, too, when we played them. You got to give them credit for that.
That is not accurate.
Oh, no, he was Caulfield, there. The other guy. I always get them. Yeah. They were missing the other guy.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, and that may be relevant, but I believe that Michigan can skate with Wisconsin, can skate with Minnesota. There's a chance.
This is feelings ball, but like you watched those last 3 Minnesota games, and it did feel like Minnesota was a better team. Now, part of that is the fact that they were playing at Minnesota, which is Olympic ice, and Notre Dame's rink is 95 feet, so it's closer to Olympic than standard ice, and the tournament will be on standard ice. But they're ahead of the curve, right? We have all freshmen who are leading us in scores. They have Ranta and all those guys who are sophomores, juniors, and seniors. So they have equivalent talent, and they're older.
So you said feelings bowl. What's your feeling about this team in tight games? You know, Mike Spath gave the stat earlier this morning where he said they're 1-6 in 1-goal games. And the thing that struck me after listening them talk about Minnesota, the references that they made going back to Michigan State and that loss, that late loss. If they had beaten Michigan State, wasn't it like 200-0 the game before or something like that?
Then 9-0.
9-0.
Yeah, then they came back and
score
lost
everything on aggregate.
Yeah, they came back and lost that game late to Michigan State. Is this a team that those experiences harden them for the tournament, or is it a sign that if they get in a situation like that again, it'll be like they get tight? Because the players are talking about in the Minnesota game, they got real tight toward the end, and it got away from them. Is that the kind of reaction that they're going to have when they face, not if they face? You face adversity in any postseason, right? So when they face that again, will they tighten up again in a similar scenario?
I don't think there's any way to predict that. I do feel like, you know, hockey in particular, when you have a sport where you take shots on goal and like 5-8% of them go in, the timing of things is extremely random. And when you say Michigan is 1-6 in 1-goal games, what that makes me think is, okay, Michigan has been very unlucky this year. Okay. And they've played better than that, than their record deserves. And they are a very dangerous team in the tournament. Now, single elimination playoff hockey, anything can happen, and anything has happened over and over and over again. But I feel fairly confident that Michigan is going to acquit themselves well, and they've got a good shot at the Frozen Four.
I couldn't agree more. What's happened to Michigan this year, the 1-6 record and 1-goal games, is randomness. As Bill James has proved that, and so who knows what happens going forward. But I think one thing you can say about Michigan is they can play with anyone and everyone. And it's just a question of what, you know, randomness, what goals go in, what don't. I don't think there's a team out there that's decidedly better. Now we haven't seen, I don't know if you've seen North Dakota. I don't know about North Dakota or Minnesota State, but if you assume that Minnesota is as good as anybody in the country, and that's sort of my assumption, I think, yeah, Michigan can make the Frozen Four, and yeah, they can win it. No reason to think not. If you look at goals against or the plus minus this year, I think Michigan is over 40 or right around 40, which is basically as good as anybody in the country except for Minnesota, I think.
Yeah, and so you've got to think that over the long haul, that stuff will even out. But we don't have a long haul.
Right.
We have a single elimination hockey tournament, and that's just is what it is.
Right, I agree.
All right, fellas, that is another one in the books. Appreciate you spending your overtime with us. By the next time we are together, well, I think we'll be talking about a Sweet 16 Michigan team. So knock on wood in that regard. But to the rest of you, again, we got to get to this break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider.